Well, welcome, everybody, to the 2:30 time slot. And guys, I'm looking on the schedule. The 2:30 time slot is jam-packed with a ton of good stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, I'm glad I'm teaching right now, but I'm thinking, man, there's so many other things that we're missing out on. So I say all that to say thanks for being here. There are lots of different choices of classes. We think this is an important topic. And we're glad you're here to have a conversation. We're gonna share some things and hopefully have some time of discussion at the end. We taught yesterday. I'm gonna introduce you just a minute, but Galen and I taught yesterday on the discipleship matrix. Where are you as a disciple? And kind of a framework for thinking about discipleship. And today we want to talk about the leadership matrix. We call the leadership matrix. Where are you as a leader? Because we think these two things, disciple, being a disciple and disciple making, go together, and leadership is a part of that. So we want to try to connect that in ways that we did yesterday. And Galen is going to do an overview for us to catch us up to speed for those of you who weren't here yesterday. But this is Galen Van Reeden, my friend and coworker. He spent 14 years in among the Kipchoge's in Kenya. And then he moved, when he came back, he was professor of missions at ACU. And then he and Becky, his wife, founded Mission Alive, which is a church planning organization for North America. They saw what they did in Kenya and came back and said, this is a new mission field. We need to be planting churches. And so they've been passionate about that for about a decade now. And more than anybody that I know has really looked at the U.S. context and thought about discipleship and disciple making. And that's why I'm associated with Galen and Mission Alive, because they'll be the first ones to tell you they haven't figured it all out. But they're working hard. They're living in the midst of it and learning all the time. And so I'm happy to be teaching with them.
Well, we're slowly filling up the class, so despite all the competition that you talked about, and despite 2:30 on Friday afternoon, I'd like to also thank you for joining us. This is Ben Langford. Ben and I have a lot of similarities. We have both been missionaries in Uganda. Mm-hmm. We were in Uganda before we went to Kenya. And Ben is the director of the Institute of Missions. How do I call it? The
Center for Global Missions.
Global Missions at Oklahoma Christian. Mm-hmm. It was at a Teachers of Missions conference that we sat down together, and we kind of developed a partnership, a journey together. Mm-hmm. Ben is on our board, but he's more than that. He is kind of on a journey with us, learning how to make disciples who help others, for us to grow as disciples and to make disciples. Daniel Jacoby, where is he at? He was telling us all about this morning. I was going to invite him to give an overview of it, but let me do that instead of Daniel. Yesterday, we talked about a new Christian, let's say, a new follower of Jesus, a new disciple. Oh, I'm following Jesus. I'm a new Christian. And he is, we would say he is unconsciously incompetent. He has not developed the patterns and the rhythms of living the Christian life. But I'm a new Christian, and it doesn't take long before one enters in what we call the D2 stage, in which one says, I don't know how to live like this. I mean, look at my patterns of life. And so this is the discouragement stage, and this is a time in which leaders work with these disciples in different ways. But if this person is faithful And his, if he receives guidance, encouragement, if there's fellowship, he'll turn the corner. And we call this D3. This is kind of the adaptive stage, the growth stage. Here a person is consciously competent, meaning if they really think it through, they really discipline themselves, they can live a Christian life. Now, of course, this can be applied to new ministers, too, if they really focus. And, I can back out and say this is where a person is consciously incompetent. Consciously, I can't do this. So one moves from unconscious incompetence to conscious incompetence to conscious competence. Then one begins to have a certain rhythm of life, and he is unconsciously competent. I don't know. There's probably an area or two of life that you just kind of flow. You don't have to think it through. You might be like Mark Woodward in doing studies through World Bible Study. There's just kind of a natural flow to things. Now, I think this helps us sort through, however we do it, there's a certain process. In this session, we're talking about leadership. So it's the leadership matrix. We equip according to where our disciples are. And our disciples need different kinds of leadership. We'd like to reflect on the way of Jesus in making disciples. We're going to have themes today that it's just disciple making. It's not just giving information. Mm-hmm. It's much more. It's imitative. And we have to learn to walk with people. So, Ben, any reflections on that before we start L1?
Yeah, and I said this yesterday before. For what I like about this kind of framework, especially thinking about discipleship and leadership, is that it's not the end-all, be-all kind of framework to think about these things, right? But what it helped me, discipleship was a fuzzy term. Like, what does it mean to make disciples? What does it mean to be a disciple? And while this is not just definitive, it gave me kind of a rubric and some categories to think about my life, where I'm at in different places. And to be quite honest with you, it doesn't always, all of my life is not here or here or here. You can begin to think about different aspects of your life. And in many ways, I'm here, right, in parts of my life. And in some ways, I come around to here, right, often. Right? My experience has always been starting a new ministry, starting new work. A few months into it, you end up here for at least a year or two, maybe shorter, maybe longer. And it's helpful for me to think about my own life and my own walk with God, and gives me a framework for where other people are. So when I work with students, I'll talk about this a little bit later. I don't really tell students your D1, D2, but it helps me recognize at least something to say, they're not here and they're not here yet. I recognize this, right? And that we can begin to make moves as a leader to help them move through some of those stages. Go ahead.
So now we begin. You know, a leader begins to team up with somebody who is a new Christian or new in a ministry. They are idealistic. And when somebody doesn't know the terrain, ministry is directing. I do, you watch. I do, you watch. There's no other way. I mean, it's like an apprentice dropping into the Kipsy, these people, where I used to live, and they didn't know the language and the culture, and we would they'd go out with us. And, you know, we would speak, and then they would speak through a translator. They'd be learning new phrases. And so it's this stage of I do, you watch. We might put the word here, model. I model ministry by doing.
An example of this, I mean, very clear in the Gospels, when you have Jesus in the Gospels saying, come follow me. Right? This is a very clear call that walk behind me. I do, you watch. Let me model for you the way this goes. Right? And this is how we all learn. You begin with your children, right? Your children can't do things. And they pick up on things that you do. Sometimes they pick up on things you don't want them to pick up on. You model things for them you don't want them. And that happens in ministry and discipleship as well, right? But at the same time, being conscious of a leader of where someone is, and Jesus is conscious of these fishermen. Come follow me. I'll make you fishers of men. Let me show you. I do, you watch for a little bit. But leaders don't just stay there, because when you move to D2, when leader moves into what we call L2, this is more of when you begin kind of a visionary phase. So modeling still occurs, but you begin providing a little bit more vision. And what it looks like, the ministry model, while modeling, while L1 was I do, you watch, this one moves to I do, you help. So it is more participatory. You're saying, come on, come alongside me, and I'll just watch. Start participating. Right? So it's still high direction, high communication, high involvement. Right? But you're also, now it means high participation, higher participation with the person who is coming alongside you. I do, you help.
During the stage, there's just extreme discouragement. I can't live as a Christian. I can't be a missionary. I can't survive. And what Jesus said in that stage is, do not fear, little flock, for the Father has been pleased to give to you the kingdom. What we do in this stage is we call it the ladder. And the ladder is really time. And the prongs of it is vision. You can do this. And it's grace. It's giving the D2 person a lot of your time. That apprentice missionary. That new Christian. Mm-hmm. A lot of your time. There's no other way. Everybody going into from a broken way of life to a Christian way of life, it's going to be disconcerting. Now, the tendency is to say, I can't do this, so I'm going to go back and I'm going to start something new. I'm going to live a different way. So there's reversion or change of ministry, because people don't make it around the corner. Let me see.
Excuse me. Are you saying that as a leader as well, or just as a disciple?
Yeah, I'm talking about the disciple, okay. But then the visionary nature of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let's go.
Let me interject. In other words, this is why vision is so important. It's difficult. It's difficult in this stage to see beyond it. So you begin going back to kind of some of these idealistic things you don't want to deal with. So this is why the vision and time, vision, and lots of grace and accessibility, this is when they need you, right, to see around the corner, right? I do, you help. Let me start participating, right? Start practicing your way into this reality, in other words. Not just watching it, but start practicing your way into this. because practice will shape conviction.
In fact, I guess we'd say here is, I do, you help. That's the stage of I do, you help.
Yeah.
Now, we come to stage number three. And in stage number three, a person has come to the level of conscious competence. I mean, they can do it. They know who they are. They know their limitations. I mean, they could go back to a stage of discouragement and probably do. But I guess I would say now you have a time of lower direction, higher consensus, more dialogue. You have much more partnership together. And what we begin to do is turn it around, and we begin to say, now you do, I help. You do, I help. And we model that way of life and in organized ways, in personal ways, I do, you help. So we'd call this, what kind of leadership would we call this?
Consensus.
Yeah, consensus.
Yeah.
We kind of converge. We're still working on terms here, but consensus.
You see, I think what you see in the Gospels, you see this more towards the end of the Gospels for Jesus' disciples. So, for example, in John 15, Jesus talking about the vine and the branches, I'm the vine, you're the branches, and he says, chapter 15, verse 15, I no longer call you servants, because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I've called you friends. For everything that I've learned from my Father, I've made known to you.
Wow.
Right. And so it's this sense that the relationship really begins changing, right? This idea that we're handing over more and more responsibility, right? This idea that... we've walked along together. I've led and modeled. I provided vision and invited you in. And now you've turned the corner and you're taking more leadership of your own. So, for example, in ministry and discipling people, and we have examples of this from our time in Africa, there was many examples to where we were able to see this when we were leading people along, and all of a sudden you could just... there's those moments when the light turns on. And it's difficult sometimes. This is the challenge for the leader, right? Here's the difficulty for the leader. This is a very attractive place for a leader to be. Not only is there a corner that needs to be turned for the disciple, a corner needs to be turned for the leader to say, hey, there's a maturity there to say, you do, and let me help. Right? You know the Father's business. You're not a servant anymore. You know the Father. And then that really leads to what we call L4. Right? When disciples mature, L4 is what is called partnership. And I think it's partnership because by this time, the ministry style is, I mean, it's come full circle. It's you do, I watch. Right? You do, I watch. So you have high enthusiasm, high confidence, high experience. There's high competency, right, for the disciple there. In other words, this is the point, and for those of you that have spent your life mentoring people and you've lived long enough to see those relationships mature and those people mature, and it be your own children, this is when you walk up and you say, I am so proud of the way you're living and what you're doing. This is the father. I mean, this is really kind of the leadership moment where it's not about you, it's about them and the joy that you get in seeing. I'm so proud of who you become. Right? I could just sit back and watch you. Or those moments where those people have gone beyond in discipleship you, and you say, I'm in D1, let me start with you, do this for me now, right? You've gone beyond being modeling, right? And this idea that I'm paraphrasing, that this idea the disciples would do greater things than what Jesus would do. Just looking at him, he said, once God's Spirit, you're going to do greater things.
Right. I think about Jesus in the Great Commission. The resurrected Lord said, all power has been given to me in heaven and on earth. Go, therefore, and make disciples, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. And lo, I'll be with you always, even to the end of the age. The resurrected Lord gave them the mission. Now, an example of this is in Kenya for 10 weeks in villages or in the towns. We would, with Timothy's and Titus's, gather. There's a person of peace who'd gather the people. We'd pray over people within that area, come together for a 2 o'clock meeting. And people would begin to come to Christ. In fact, we would shake the dust off our feet if there were not baptisms within 10 weeks. We expected a response. We had gospel fluency. And we had lessons that we prepared. But these people who came to Christ were D2. They're D1. And we were modeling for them a way of life. And then we went into a second stage in which we call this the developing church stage, in which we worked with them one day a week, but we gave them the fundamentals of the gospel, and evangelism continued to ramify forward. And boy, there's so much discouragement because people are coming out of animism to Christianity. And during those first years, the reversion was very, very high. But then the leadership solidified. And then we would come back and we would do extension courses. We'd do leadership courses with Timothy's and Titus's for groups of more mature churches in a third stage. And pretty soon, we would call them mature churches. So we basically went around the circle in Africa and we... are beginning to say that discipleship in North America has to be as tangible, and we just need to realize people don't know how to make disciples. Now,
I'm still learning.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You have anything to add to that?
No. Well, then. But other than I'm still learning.
Well. I'm still learning too. I guess I need to say about Mission Alive. I was executive director until first of this year, and Todd Vogt took over for me. He's way beyond where I am in terms of discernment and leadership. And Charles Kaiser, who did the class before this one, is the director of mission training. And what we've put together in the last 3 years, Charles has done. And I have been off to the side, and we've just reinvented ourselves. So we're always going around this circle. But now it's Ben's opportunity. I want to interview you now. You interviewed me last time. What did you call this?
Confession time. Confession time. I made you confess. Now it's payback.
Okay, it's payback.
Public confession.
So describe yourself... as a disciple, as a leader, mm-hmm. in your family. Maybe at different stages and different times.
Yeah. Well, I would even say, here's the beauty why I like this, these frameworks, is that not only different times, but there are different aspects of my family life that I think I've identified in different stages. For example, let me say this. My wife, Kim... In some ways, for my children, right, and Kim, there's a modeling And this is not a reflection on them, other than if you know my student, she'd be fine with you telling us. She didn't grow up as a Christian. She didn't grow up coming to Pepperdine Bible lectures.
In fact, one of the great things, a little side note, great things about marrying someone that didn't grow up in the church, you know, the conversations you get about church and all the issues, she didn't even get all those issues. She's like, why are you guys talking about that?
Praise God.
Right? This when somebody asks, what's your view on musical instruments in worship? She's like, I don't know, they sound good? I don't understand the question. Like, she gets it now, but it's the kind of the beauty, it's kind of refreshing, right? Which does say something about the people we're talking to that don't have no church background. And sometimes we speak a language. And it's important, these issues in some ways are important to talk about. But in some ways, her family life, parents are divorced. We live in Oklahoma because she wants to live near my parents. In fact, she would say my parents are her parents. Wow. And so I find myself becoming conscious about this, of modeling things, because it was modeled for me. Not because I'm better than my wife in any way. She models things for me. But because you grow up and see that, and you realize, oh, this is natural for me because I've been practicing it. I've been through this, right? And she yearns for that, from my parents, from myself. But in many ways in our relationship, I think we're in D3. Because I would say there are times that I do, she helps. I guess that's D2. I say D3 because we're both here. I do, she helps, and then it's very much I lean on her, and she does, and I help. I mean, we very much kind of share this leadership in our family and roles and responsibilities and this mutual submission. We're learning what this means, submit to one another, right? Which is, I think, here, it's this submission thing. You know, we turn the corner a bit. Sometimes I feel here a little bit, but more this mutual submission. And it's just fun with my children, thinking about discipling them, because I don't want to say they're discouraged, but it's this I do, you help. They're 10 years old. They're beginning to really participate more. And it's good. This is helpful for me to think, hey, this is kind of where they're at. And there's a little bit of they do, I help, right?
Well, you have worked as a missionary among the Basoga in Uganda. Mm-hmm. Describe yourself as a leader among the Basoga.
The beautiful thing about coming in, which is very different than your experience, I came in, I was joined the team that was in Jinja, Uganda. So Sarah Barton, who spoke yesterday, was one of my teammates. She was a part of that original team. She was a part of a group that mentored me and discipled me, and then they asked me to join that team along with several others. So when we came in, they'd been there about 7-8 years, and there was about 60 churches already. So there were Ugandan Christians well along this line, right? The beautiful thing about it was that I didn't come in leading so much. I kind of came in, I don't know where this really fits, partnership's a good word, but it was really, instead of I'm walking in front of them and they're behind, we're walking side by side holding hands, which is very appropriate in Uganda. That's a friendship. You see men. You don't see men and women holding hands. You see women and women holding hands and men and men. It's a sign of friendship, which is kind of an odd feeling coming from America. A guy grabs your hand, you know. Especially, it takes a long time, especially when you're close friends. I call it the interdigitation of your fingers. This is a very awkward for an American, right? Right? But it's a sign of friendship. So it was very unique because I was gifted in ways where for many of them, for many of my brothers and sisters who are mature Christians, I do, you help. I had some gifts. I had some theological training. I had just natural spiritual gifts that were good for them. And then, really, I spent a long time in D2. It was really the other way around, where they did, I watched. They did, I helped, particularly with culture and language. particularly with thinking being pastoring, being pastoral in that context. It's not the same questions, not the same. So I was really, it was all over the map, and so depending on who I was with and what context, but it was living somewhere, I think, in these two. It was a really beautiful moment for me because I was able to lead and follow. The people I was leading was also the people I was following all at the same time.
Yeah.
It was a beautiful experience.
Describe your major adaptation as an L2 leader.
In ministry, in that particular ministry context,
in Uganda.
And this is my same problem. I've alluded to this. This is my same problem I have now. My own instinctual instincts for being a leader is model and visionary. Oh, it's really difficult for me to go, you do and I help. You know, there's that kind of pride about, no, I got the vision. And here's the thing, when they do, you help, you lose a little bit of control of that.
Good.
That's a good thing for me. Yeah. But it's a hard thing.
And an illustration of that, D3, is the limited commission when he sent them out. And then they came back and he debriefed them. So Jesus was sending out very early.
Yeah.
And then, when they were unprepared for it, Jesus left. And they, under the Holy Spirit, had to do it. And we don't release soon enough. We always doubt that people can do it. And so we find in church planting, there's that high expectation of people to begin to do. And so moving people from not knowing anything and being idealistic to saying, I can't do this, to beginning to say, well, yeah, I can kind of do this. And we're expecting them to do it. And then pretty soon, they become much more natural in doing it.
Yeah, this is the most vulnerable time for both the disciple and the leader right here.
Yeah.
This movement. Right. This needs a lot of attention.
And we tend to give up on people here when they need time, vision of what they can become, and grace.
Or we don't let them move here and here because we end up, and we have less churches and less disciples because of it. Yes, what were you going to say? Go ahead.
Well, just that it's also very difficult because the missionary is regarded, or any leader is regarded so highly, it's difficult for the disciple to also go ahead and assume that role for the leader to back off. It's difficult on both parts, I believe.
Yeah. Or if we've realized that by ourselves and we want to give it up too quickly and we think they're here, but they're really here, and we give it too much, it doesn't work. Yeah.
Have you developed or do you know of materials that are out there that help your disciples develop the skills that they need, a skill set of becoming, moving to that D3 level, to help them have benchmarks and goals for themselves that you can walk through with them. And I'm talking about their own spiritual growth, not just doing ministry, but personal spiritual growth.
I defer to you first.
Now, do you think we're talking about vehicles here? Okay. Let me say, in renewal, we begin with people, and in church planting, we begin with a lab called Cultivate Personal Discipleship. And it's a two-day transformative lab in which, I mean, the thing is, what God does in me, he begins to do through me. It's really spiritual formation. Then we begin equipping huddles, and we develop with them a process of disciples. So we model with them. And even in these labs, we have apprentices, our Timothys and Tituses, who lead these labs, and they kind of go around the square. So let me say, just in a big picture, Todd Boat has gone around the square and has come to the point of a partnership with me, in fact leading me and maturing, and has become the executive director of Mission Alive. Charles Kiley, I put together the first theology and strategy labs. But when we decided to reconfigure ourselves and develop an imitative kind of model, Charles developed that with all of our help multiple. And so, in a sense, we became apprentices of a man half my age. So, a lot of this is walking with people. We would say a discipleship group using a book like Discipleship Essentials is a journey if you want to work with a small group of people. It's a vehicle of walking around the circle. Now, it's somewhat cognitive. It's very natural for those of us who are older. For our contemporary people, we walk with them in more experiential discipleship huddles once a week. And we talk about what is God saying, what are we going to do about it, how do we live up in and out. It's a process of discernment. And then lo and behold, the people in this huddle become apprentices with us in another huddle, and then they begin to do huddles, and then they begin to do it in the church. So we go around the square with folks like
that. Let me say, I was in a huddle with several other people in Galen leading it. And one of the things about the huddle, discipleship huddle, what was great, like the benchmarks, right? We used the book Cultivating a Discipleship Culture. Was that the name of it? By Mike Breen. And
What is it, Becky?
Building a Discipleship Culture by Mike Breen, which was very helpful. They provide language and images that I think what you're talking about, that are some... But what I liked most about it was that they would ask you questions to get you talking about it. Galen was good at this, asking questions to get me talking about it. And then, but being good at asking those questions to where... how do you think I'm naming my own goals. I'm naming my own movements, where I need to move. The questions have allowed me to answer, have allowed me to name those things, where I am, where I need to be. What does it mean to move here for you? But then what happened over time, as Galen got to know and the other group members and Galen began, as they knew, they wouldn't just ask the questions. They'd begin to speak into my life and say, they knew me well enough to say, no, I think this is what it looks like for you. And would you do this? And then next week, when you come back, will you come back and tell us about that? Right? Maybe a small step in what that looked like with my wife, or in talking with students, right? In my own prayer life, right? So that's a difficult. For some people it's intuitive, right? I'd much rather have all these nice little steps to follow, but it's learning to ask the right questions, helping people identify where they're at and say, well, what does it mean to move this way? And then knowing them, listening and knowing them well enough to then be able to speak in their life and say, what about this? And sometimes Galen spoke into my life, and he didn't get it, nail it, but it made me say, it's not exactly that, it's exactly this. So he spoke into my life, and me recognizing that wasn't exactly it made me realize, well, what is it? And I was able to name it. So even not naming it exactly, sometimes you... Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? I'm not giving concrete examples, but I'm giving general.
I guess I give a testimony that I follow Becky so often.
because she has the wisdom to ask questions even way better than I do. And I would say building a discipling culture and equipping huddles is basically formed around asking questions to help people discern the next steps, because we believe that in people are the resources. So we always operate out of this kind of diagram. There's information. And so it's like Jesus who taught the Sermon on the Mount. He was always teaching, but then Jesus also said, "Follow me, I will make you fishers of men." And so there's imitation. And then he sent them out on the limited commission, and they had to figure out how to act, and there is innovation. And the major change we have had to make in Mission Alive is that originally we went from information to innovation, and most of our church planters couldn't make that jump. And now we are much more going from information to imitation, developing, modeling, disciple-making, modeling how to do it, and creating the internships. I mean, the huddle that I did with Ben and campus people, Becky was also on that, and she listened and then gave her wisdom at the end. But that was simply creating a model for campuses, teachers of missions, and campus ministers to work.
You know, really quick, and this has been a major, major issue with the formation of in university with our people, and I think it bleeds over into the church. You know, where are people, you heard me say this yesterday, Church of Christ are people that if we think we give them the right information, they'll do it right. Mm-hmm. Right information is important, right? But, and my temptation is take information and start adapting. What I mean by innovation, start living it out, adapting it, right? But formation, I think there's a level of, my example, to use a sports analogy, was I was a soccer coach, right? If you've never seen soccer, if you've never played soccer, how to strike a ball correctly, I could tell you that, and the chances are you would be horrible at it if you try to take that information and just go and do it, right? I mean, you'd be able to see it, imitate it. It's amazing. It's amazing because I play. Let me stick with this, and it's not a ministry example, but it's a sports example. Good. I've coached for a long time.
Good.
I coached collegiately soccer. Where my son's at, in some of his technique, especially his technique of taking shots with other. I didn't really teach him this, but I think he's watched me long enough and imitated me. It's so fun because I see him, and my wife sees him, and they go, "Hey, that's a little Ben Lankford hitting the ball." I mean, it's so fun, but it really hits home. I mean, he's just watching and imitating, right? Where other kids on his team don't have that to look at all the time. It's very important, and so I think in our universities and our churches, we're trying, and Mission Alive is trying to say, what processes that take us beyond just giving information and say, "Hey, here's the information, go do it." Mm-hmm. To, wait, how does this get played out? What is, and this is part of discipleship. Yeah, go ahead.
Two questions all wrapped up in one. In Mark 5, we see an example of a guy who gets healed, and he wants to hang out with Jesus, but Jesus sends him out with very little information or imitation or anything, and he's very fruitful. You know what I speak of, right? Okay. So at what point in this is it appropriate and to anoint and send? I would gravitate towards D4, L4, but in that example, Jesus sent.
Well, let me say something real quick, and then because Dana may correct me, and I'm totally fine. In my own life, there are some things Galen has recognized. I've gone to his huddles that he recognizes I'm somewhere here. There are other aspects in my life where he recognized as soon as he met me, he started affirming me and my gifts.
which he didn't say this, but he was saying, you're D4 and you should be doing this. In other words, giving, anointing me to say, you should be doing this. You should be involved in these things. You're gifted this way. You're, you know. But then also inviting me in because knowing that not all of my life is here. Right? So maybe I would say Jesus is practicing also. We talk about reading scripture, read context, and be able to kind of read people in a positive way to look and we're not going to read it right, but say, recognize God's gifts in the Spirit. Recognize, this is why this is helpful, it gives me categories to help recognize, not to put them in a box, to recognize maybe where they're at and maybe what kind of leader I need to be, what kind of disciple they are, where I'm at, you know, how that relationship works, the matrix of all that, right? Yeah, go ahead.
And the paradox of this class is we've given you much too much information. and so we've given you a paradigm to think of, but boy, that's the limitation. And there's a sense we have violated everything we have. And in an equipping huddle, we would not come to this matrix until, first of all, people learn to listen to God and obey God. We would say that's the first instinct, and we wouldn't even put a life shape out for that. We tend to go with life shapes because this is a visual culture, and so anyway, I hope this has been helpful. The thing is, we cannot do what we're doing now to transform the world without imitating practices, and we can't put all, everybody in the same field. We tend to default toward thinking that we're going to gather up all of this group of people and make a decision. The biggest chaos in the church is when we have a sampling of the church to make decisions about the future of the church. It's not Christian. It's crazy. So here are all of these consumer Christians and all of these kinds of people trying. What we do is we make disciples, leaders grow up, and those leaders, because of who they are as shepherds and elders, then begin to make decisions. So the bottom, the foundation of what a church is, it's making disciples that then go on mission, and then as they go on mission, they begin to form community. Now let me say, we like worship communities where there's vibrant worship, where there's testimony about mission. We also believe in communities that are in the neighborhoods, in the networks, that people live life together. In fact, Charles Kaiser in the previous talk about living up in and out spiritual family on mission. I mean, this is Charles Kaiser's diagram here, spiritual families on mission, is really kind of the end result of what we talked about. Thank you for coming.
Yeah, thank you guys
and
very much.
I hope that God has blessed you. You have blessed us.
Yeah, thank you.